Fall in love with low prices. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on delicious 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, aliens, ghosts, and robots. It's Keith. Hope you're doing great today. Well, we're in the penultimate episode. There's this one and one other before the conclusion of An Invisible Sun, and I am so very grateful that you stuck with me and came along for the ride. And if you're enjoying the show, as I hope you are, I just have a couple of favors to ask. The first thing would be to leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast apps. This helps other listeners know that the story is something you enjoyed and that they might enjoy too. The other thing, which is probably the biggest help you can give to an indie audio fiction producer, is to tell people about the story, to share it on social media, to have conversations about it, to recommend it to other people who like the same things you do. The more word of mouth we can get going, the more people will come to the story. So I'd really appreciate it if you could do either or both of those things for me. But what's coming up next? I'll have more information about that in the prelude to the final episode. So tune in next week and enjoy today's show. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 24. Christopher, wake up. Catherine called me back from one shadowy, pulsating world to another. My body was hammered with agony, joints stiff, and muscles cramping.
What is it?
My voice rasped out of me like my breath was barbed. But I found the energy to focus, tried to stretch petrified limbs, and put away the pain.
We're almost there.
Dried blood streaked her face. Her hand on her broken arm was swollen and purple. The space outside the ship seemed like it was closing in on us, like a tunnel that grows narrower the further you go along it. The ribbon-like rifts were bigger, angrier, more frequent. The ship was also vibrating much harder now. Catherine had her good hand on the flight yoke. The estimated arrival countdown on the display read less than a minute left. Lucy, having returned the eye back to the satchel, prayed silently.
All right, get ready. When we come out, you'll need to disengage the skids. You remember how to do that? Yes.
Catherine nodded, and then we waited. The time counter reached zero, and nothing happened. The angry, violet energy outside stormed around us. The counter was in positive numbers now, counting upward from zero. But we kept trembling. 15 seconds. 20. The ship shuddered, and the rifts in space turned into outright holes, jagged patches through which real space flashes through. Messages started blinking on the screens, warning of things I didn't fully understand. Field strength low, temperature alert, elevated hull pressure. But what was I supposed to do? Then there was a flash of violet which almost instantly turned red. Then it felt like we hit something. The aft to the ship was traveling faster than the four, and we went tumbling back into reality, end over end, jerked hard against our restraining belts. Catherine cried out in pain, but somehow managed to keep hold of the yoke. We were spinning furiously in space, and my blood rushed to my head, making everything swim.
Christopher, activate the main drive!
It took a moment of whirling agony to find the right button, but I did. The conventional engines roared to life. Catherine pulled at the yoke, and the spinning slowed. My insides lurched as the stars outside twisted past. But eventually, Catherine slowed us down, stopped the spin, and brought us to a halt. I felt hot all over, and I was suddenly bathed in sweat. I think if I'd eaten anything in the past day, I would have thrown it up. Next to me, Catherine was whimpering in misery, cradling her broken arm. But the ship seemed to have survived.
Look.
Sister Lucy was strapped in behind us, hugging Matthew's satchel with both arms. She was breathing heavily from our brutal reentry, but her eyes were focused on something through the window. Shayot's first gate floated in space near us. It was a little hard to make out. Everything was dark outside of our cockpit. The background of stars was magnificent, but when I found our sun, it was a tiny dot, brighter than its far more distant neighbors, but only bright enough to barely dispel the darkness we were suspended in. The gate was swallowed in shadow. Like the Marley Gate, it was small, just a little bigger than the one the miners assembled. And it did look like a prototype to my eyes, bulky, simple, in a style that's decades old, made of steel and ceramic plates. There was still an elegance about it. It was carefully designed and built, not hastily cobbled together from stolen plans with whatever machinery was at hand. Little blinking lights flicked around its outer perimeter, making it easier to find in the dark. But out here, how could anyone find it unless they knew where it was? Imagine if there was only one buoy floating in the entire Pacific Ocean, but you didn't know where. And imagine you, lost somewhere on the waves, had to find it to survive. How easy it would be to sail right past it. How impossible it would be to stumble upon by chance. Catherine studied a screen in front of her.
It's still powered up. I guess it is automated after all. Hang on, there's something else.
She reached across her lap to manipulate the thruster controls with her good hand, and the ship slowly rotated to face a small space station. It looked practically antique, with boxy habitat modules and a huge solar panel array lapping up what faint light there was. The surface was dotted with antennae and transmitters and other machinery I didn't recognize. The windows of the station were dark. I didn't see any ships or people or other activity. Was the station automated too?
We need to record this. All right. Add in camera feeds and cockpit audio to the flight recorder. Can we get closer? Yeah, but look. Once they figured out where we were going, they may have sent some sort of shutdown signal from Marley or activated some sort of automatic defense system. I don't know. If they sent it shortly after we left, that transmission could arrive at any moment.
I was still sweating and I felt unusually dizzy and nauseous. The cockpit was oppressively hot.
So, what do you say? We should go back? I'm saying I don't know how much time we have before we can't. Now, to be honest, if Shayot took control of the Marley Gate and shut down all the others, we don't have a place to go back to. But if Baptiste has retaken the station, they could take control of the Marley Ring itself. Maybe.
But she didn't think it was likely.
In any case, we should try to record whatever we can while we're here. Make the most of this opportunity. Christopher, are you okay?
I wasn't. Something was wrong. My skin was crawling. I couldn't stop sweating, and my head was throbbing.
No. But let's go. check out that station.
Catherine and Lucy exchanged quiet looks, but then Catherine piloted us toward the station, while Lucy leaned forward, trying to see everything she could through the cockpit window. There was no sign of activity on the station as we approached it. There were other structures floating near it too, like outbuildings. They had huge sensor arms extended, arrayed like a grid, facing some spot further ahead. There were a couple of freestanding habitat modules, big and blocky, reinforced with extra-thick plating. In fact, all the station's buildings were built with heavy-duty insulation on one side, a barrier pointed in the same direction as the scientific equipment was.
There's a docking bay over there. We could try to board, but if they're locked, we won't get in. If we have time, we can try. First, can you survey everything out here for the records? All right. A deep space research station doesn't mean anything, you know? Let us just see what we can before we reach our conclusions.
The sweat was running down my cheeks and neck. My eyes were itching as I looked beyond the station, beyond the old inactive machines, and toward what they're pointing at. There was something there, I think. A blurry swath of color far away in the otherwise empty black. It was a light. And it was getting brighter. Or rather, it was becoming manifest. Translucency giving way to opacity. I flinched as the glare hurt my eyes.
You don't see that, do you?
They looked at me, and then at the window.
What is it?
It was still fading in, but I could see it. A great, glowing ball of violet energy, shimmering and swimming, searing my retinas when I looked at it for too long. Sometimes it faded back to translucency, and I could make out the starfield behind it. Sometimes the light seemed to pour into my veins, through my eyes, sending rivers of heat into my limbs. But it was there. It is there. I had to laugh. The others stared at me in worry.
What do you see? An invisible sun.
I was baking in its purple glow. Its light filled the cockpit and fell on their faces, but they didn't see it. It was only for me.
It's there, Lucy. It's there.
She strained against her harness, leaning forward, staring off at where I was looking, desperate to see. Catherine kept her attention on screens, frowning as she overlaid the camera view with a few filters. Of course, she sees nothing. Neither of them do.
What does it look like? It's light? Like it's pouring in from somewhere. It's huge, like the moon or bigger. I can't quite look at it directly. And the edges are slippery, shifting around. It comes and goes sometimes, but the heat? You can't feel the heat? No. Maybe it's the radiation. It's so intense. Look at the insulation on all the station modules. It's probably why there's no one here. People can't, they can't last here for long. But it's not affecting us. It probably is.
Lucy was still gazing into the darkness, searching for the light I said was there.
But we have been taking the treatment in the sleeping pills. I am guessing you and I have a buffer, at least for a while. But Christopher has not been taking it.
It was just so absurd. My head was pounding. I could feel my heartbeat throbbing behind my eyes. Catherine turned to Lucy.
So if it's proof you wanted, why didn't you stop taking the pills when you knew what they were? Because someone has to lead, and I cannot lead if I am dead.
But the tortured look on her face told me she had considered it. Even now, she wished she were dying like me, just so she could see it.
All right, well, we can't stay here. Even if this radiation doesn't kill Christopher, we certainly won't be safe for long ourselves.
Yes.
Let us get what we can quickly. We should...
Purple light reflected off the surfaces of the space station, its source behind us. Catherine sat up suddenly in her chair.
Someone just came through the gate. It's Shayot. It's the ship from Marley. They followed us through.
She increased thrust, pulled the ship around. I gripped the armrest of my chair to hang on. The searing purple sun swung away from the window, but I could still feel the heat of it against my body.
They're recovering from the jump. What do you want to do? They're blocking the gate. Can you outmaneuver them? Not with one arm. They fired a missile! God, they're gonna kill us!
She pushed the throttle forward, hard. An agony one shot through space. We were slammed back into our chairs as Catherine tried to fly us behind the space station, putting it between us and the Shayot ships. But the alarms rang on. The missile was still coming. The space station's bulk was slowly rising between us and the enemy, but it was going too slow. Lucy clutched Matthew's satchel to her body, her expression bleak. Catherine was completely focused on the screens before her.
If I can...
My ears were ringing. Flashes of color smeared across my vision and evaporated. The world fitfully returned to focus. The cockpit was filled with smoke and alarms. My lungs were burning. Catherine was coughing and trying to stop us from another frantic tumble through space. She pulled on the flight yoke, but the ship did not respond. She tried the maneuvering thrusters, and we began to slow. Behind me, Sister Lucy fumbled with a handheld fire extinguisher, trying to put out an electrical fire that was burning at the back of the flight deck.
What happened?
Catherine's good arm trembled as she struggled with the controls.
They hit us?
The wound on her forehead had reopened, leaking lines of red down the side of her face. She blinked slowly, as if she couldn't get her eyes to focus.
The main drive is dead. We're leaking oxygen. I can't... All we have are thrusters. The station is between us and them, but I think they're coming around for another shot. What about the twine drive?
She squinted at the control panel.
One of the skids is damaged. The drive itself seems okay. It might work, but can you get us to the gate? Not in time. Not on thrusters. They'll blow us up before we're anywhere close.
Lucy finished spraying foam over the fire, which seemed to be out. Silently, she looked at us, waiting. She had nothing to offer. She was out of ideas. And so was I. If we headed for the gate, we would surely die by another missile. Even if we did make it back, the enemy ship would only follow us back to Marley, assuming the Marley gate still worked for us. They would likely destroy us there, or destroy Marley, and it would all be over. But if we died here, then all of this would die with us. We had to get back to Marley and to Earth. We had to show everyone the eye. We had to share the secret of this base. We had to live. But no. Of course, we didn't have to live. I wiped the sweat from my brow.
All right. Can you open a comm channel to that ship?
Catherine stared at me. She had already given up.
Probably, if they used the usual frequencies. Do it, please. And both of you, keep quiet. Not a word. Not a sound.
I pulled the headset on, the channel humming. There was some sort of ghostly hiss on the line. I wondered if I was hearing the invisible sun behind us.
Was that its spectral heat whispering in my ears? I didn't have to try very hard to sound pathetic as I spoke over the comms.
Please. Please don't shoot. They're dead. You killed them. All of them but me. Please.
I couldn't see the Shayot ship, but I knew it couldn't be long before they would come around the space station and fire the missile that would kill us.
Please. I have what you want. I have what they found on Mars. The Eye? I know your people want it for themselves. If you blow me up, you'll lose it forever.
Lucy stared at me in horror, but I held up a finger to her, demanding silence.
You will surrender it to us.
Yes, of course. Just don't kill me. My ship is losing oxygen. It's dead in space. There are fires spreading. The whole ship is going up in flames. It'll take the Eye with it. I've only got minutes. Just take me with you. I'll give you the Eye. Just don't let me die out here, please. I got a pressure suit. I'll come out of the airlock. Just pick me up, and it's yours.
The three of us looked at each other in silent fear. All I had was a hope. A tiny hope.
We're approaching you now. Exit the ship and board at the ventral airlock.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm putting on my pressure suit now.
I unsnapped myself from the pilot's seat and drifted to the back of the flight deck.
I hope there's still atmosphere in the passenger cabin. There is, but it's leaking. Christopher, I don't understand. What kind of deal do you think they'll give you? And what are we going to do? They'll figure out we're alive soon enough. I know. Once I've reached the other ship, I want you to use the thrusters to head back to the gate. As fast as they'll go. I'm betting the Marley Gate will still be active, since they'll be expecting their own ship to return. But what about you? Christopher, they'll kill you. Maybe.
I was soaked in sweat. My body felt like it was falling apart at the joints, pulsing with pain and fever.
But I suppose that's going to happen soon anyway.
A little guilt flashed across her face. She blamed herself, but I had learned to forgive her, so I tried to spare her some of that.
But be ready to pick me up anyway, okay?
After all, I suppose there's a chance. I turned to Lucy, who watched me, confused, lost, but a little hopeful. I squeezed her hand, and she squeezed back. Then I reached for the satchel, which held the Eye.
I'll need this.
An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms, and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it, and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server, or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to invisiblesunpod.com for more information.